So this is the audio that accompanies Englehart versus Kramer. Going to go through the slides and talk about the case. And so we just got done talking about general warranty of title. And the one thing that hopefully you got a sense of there is, you might have warranties that the person who's selling it to you owns it. They might also be warranting you that you're not buying a litigation in a sense that somebody else doesn't have rights to your property or the ability to encumber it in some way. But this looks very different from, let's say, the implied warranty of habitability that we saw in the landlord-tenant context. What other required warranties or promises does a buyer need to make to a seller? And in Englehart, we're going to see the kind of results of our transfer from a very kind of caveat emptor, kind of buyer beware, you take the property as is, to starting to graft on some requirements of at least disclosures and truthful disclosures from the seller to the buyer. So Englehart versus Kramer, we're in South Dakota. Here we've got Miss Kramer. She wants to sell her house, but in her basement, which basements sometimes have, there's some water seepage in some locations. And they find out about this when they remove all this old sheetrock and they see crumbling walls. This is on, again, this is not the actual picture from the case. I'm just assuming it's something like this. If you look at the upper left, we've got a kind of crumbling of the cinder block, concrete that's in the basement, clear water staining, and there's actually even some water pooling in the corners, etc. But Ms. Kramer, while she's trying to kind of get everything together to sell, brings over some family and friends. They try to clean some stuff up, and so they end up putting up wood paneling over these basement walls so they look nicer. And Ms. Kramer actually even takes a bunch of pictures before and after for what it looks like. So I'm assuming the one over on the right, we're in good shape. Ms. Kramer says we're good to go, and so she's now trying to find a buyer. And we're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and here's our buyer, Ms. Englehart. She's looking for a home. The case is commiserate with her income level. She's a first-time buyer. She actually does have a real estate agent. The house that she's going to purchase sells for $35,000, which probably even in a lower income area is a fairly cheap house. The one thing that South Dakota requires when we are selling a home is for the seller to make certain disclosures to the buyer. Right, and these disclosures are basically answers to pre-identified questions on the form. And so if we go to actually the third slide, we can see some of the answers to some of the questions that are being asked under the form. And we can think about why the form would have these questions on it. What it turns out is in a lot of jurisdictions, these required disclosure questions are based a lot on asking things that as a buyer, I wouldn't readily be able to see or determine. So these would be patent, and not patent things, but latent things, things that would be hard to find out. So one of the questions that's asked is, have you ever experienced water penetration in the basement within the past 2 years? You can see as a buyer, I'd like to know this. And it turns out Kramer replies, and these are reproduced on slide 3, or you can read in the book on 297 to 298. Small amount of HTO penetration in the northwest and northeast corners when it rains. Right? Okay. And then to number 3, the question, is there any cracked walls or floors? She says, oh, basement floors, some spots in the basement, east bedroom walls as well. And then finally, under 5, they say, look, are there any other additional problems that you have that haven't been disclosed before? And she says, look, basement cement walls have some crumbling behind paneling, and the basement floor is cracked and uneven in spots. Okay, so Ms. Englehart gets this. She buys the house. And if you go back up to slide 2, some time, it turns out that she starts seeing all this buckling in the wood paneling that was there that was put up by Ms. Kramer and discovers, once she pulls it back, that, oh my gosh, there's a lot of water coming in through this south wall, and there are massive cracks in the cement walls. And she brings in Chester Quick, a great name for someone that might do some concrete work. And he comes in and says, you know what, you got really bad problem in these basement walls. And it's going to cost a ton of money to get this fixed. And so Kramer, Miss Englehart turns around and sues Miss Kramer for inadequate disclosure under these disclosure laws, and says, look, your failure to comply with these and actually fraudulently complying with them has damaged me, and really wants basically all of her money back from the sale of the property. And so the question in the case is, okay, what do these disclosure requirements, what duties do they put on a seller, particularly when we're moving from a scenario where before we didn't require anything from the seller and all the burden was put on the buyer, kind of true caveat emptor. And so if you go to the fourth slide, the disclosure laws in South Dakota, and they're very similar to disclosure laws in a lot of other jurisdictions, and we'll take a look at Virginia's here in just a little bit, require a seller to complete the disclosure statement. And if they truthfully complete it, they then are not liable at all for anything, right? So we could have a scenario here where Ms. Kramer puts on the disclosure statement, the basement is in terrible shape. It floods horribly. The walls are crumbling. And if Ms. Englehart still purchases the property and all of that that was stated on the form is true, there can't be any liability, right? So the idea being, as long as I truthfully disclose as a seller, I now absolve myself of any liability from the buyer's point of view, right? This is very different than the landlord-tenant context, where there we found out that we can't have waiver, right? But here, in some ways, disclosure prompts a waiver of any a liability. And so what Ms. Kramer says is, well, yeah, I truthfully completed the forms there. I said that there was water penetration and that there were, some cracks in some spots of the basement. But the South Dakota Supreme Court says, you know what, though? It's not just whether you truthfully complete it, that you actually have to complete it in good faith. Right, and what does good faith mean here? And this is a reproduction on slide 4 of what the court's definition of good faith. There must be an honest intention to abstain from taking any unconscious advantage of another, even through the forms of or technicalities of law, together with an absence of all information or belief which would render the transaction unconscientious. Right, so the question becomes: Is Ms. Kramer specifically either not telling the whole truth or holding back some information, that intentional holding back or half-truthing is taking advantage of another? And the court here says, you know what, we clearly don't have a good faith disclosure here. The fact that she covers it up, Ms. Kramer, the seller, that she had an easy way to show her what was going on. She had pictures before and after. And she kind of puts these half-truths in the answers to the questions, is enough to violate these disclosures. And so since we don't have a truthful disclosure, that means now Ms. Kramer has no ability to say that she's not liable for these defects, right? And so in the end, the court finds her liable for the defects to the property. If she had intentionally kind of truthfully completed with good faith, then she wouldn't have been liable for any of this stuff. Assumption being, right, that Ms. Englehart either doesn't buy the property because she sees those disclosures and says, look, I don't want a property like that, or says, you know what, yeah, I will take it, but I'll take it for a lower amount or something like that. And so this brings us to the, let me make sure I get the slide numbers here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? That is, now almost in every jurisdiction, we are no longer in a true kind of just pure buyer beware. Caveat emptor. In the old regimes, the way you would get around this is I just didn't make any representations to the buyer. So I said nothing, right? And so as long as I didn't say anything, I couldn't be liable at all. I would only be liable if I said to the buyer, hey, there's been no flooding in the basement, right? But as long as I don't make an affirmative representation, under the old common law, I was in good shape. Now I can be liable even for non-disclosures. So this case is a good example, right, where there are questions asked on these required disclosure forms, and I don't disclose all the information. Right here, she didn't, in good faith, truthfully complete everything. And so how does this really change a lot of real estate deals when we're in these kind of disclosure requirement jurisdictions? Is that we end up having these as-is clauses, right? So this is the scenario where even though I don't fill out the required disclosure statement, the contract of sale basically has both parties agreeing that the property is being sold as-is with no disclosure. And there, even in the South Dakota's kind of implementation of this, you look at note one, and the court says, look, if it turns out that the buyer is willing to kind of waive this idea of our disclosure regime and say, look, I'll buy the property as is, then we're back to the old regime of where we just need to look for affirmative misrepresentations, right? So if we redo the Englehart-Kramer transaction, but here what happens is Ms. Kramer says, look, I'm going to sell the property to you as is, Mrs. Englehart, and she says, look, that's fine, and it floods the basement, etc. No liability. The as-is clause actually even waives this requirement to do any of these disclosures, right? Now, even in that scenario, if I say as-is, and Ms. Kramer kind of presses and says, yeah, but has it flooded in the basement any? And Ms. Kramer says, oh, no, it hasn't flooded at all. That would be an affirmative misrepresentation and we'd have liability. And so where does this kind of put us? It puts us in where a lot of jurisdictions, we've got these disclosures that are there. They're waivable with as-is clauses. But there's still some mandatory disclosures that have to be made. And so if you click on the link in that last slide, you'll get taken to, I'm assuming you're in an internet-connected device, the Virginia Residential Property Disclosure Act. And this Residential Property Disclosure Act has what it's applicable to. And if you go down, you'll find some required disclosures. And then you'll find some other ones that are not required, right, but permissive. That is, they could be disclosed. So for example, if you keep going all the way down, 55.1-705, required disclosure defective drywall, right? And a lot of these are disclosures that are required that only the seller would know. It would be really hard for the buyer to find out. And usually they have a public health concern, right? So this is drywall. This happened a lot actually during Katrina, where we had a lot of building going on in the United States. We needed a massive supply of drywall, and we ended up having some drywall that had some carcinogens in it. And here, if it turns out that the seller has actual knowledge of this defective drywall, they have to disclose that. It's required. It's not waivable, right? Another one, if you keep going down, we've got our Breaking Bad required disclosure, 55.1-708. I have to disclose whether the property was previously used to manufacture methamphetamines. Right, this is something that has a public health concern in a variety of ways. Something I wouldn't necessarily know going into the property. I assume all the meth lab's been taken up or put away, and we're required to disclose it in that particular instance. And so for these kind of required disclosures, right, if you take a look at them, right, I've got to disclose them. And if you even go to the Real Estate Board website, the Virginia Real Estate Board, which is an administrative agency, they have the actual forms that's required in those particular scenarios. And you've got to provide written notice in those. And so those are scenarios where I have to disclose. Can you still de facto avoid them? Well, the way I can de facto avoid them is just because they're mandatory disclosures doesn't mean that someone still can't purchase them, right? And so one way to do this is say if you have knowledge of these, disclose and say, I've got these things. It doesn't mean that the purchase doesn't happen. And unlike the implied warranty of habitability, we don't require remediation, right? I can still buy that property that's got Chinese drywall or it was a methamphetamine lab. There might only be a certain things that must be fixed, right? Let's say lead paint or something like that, right? And so these aren't waivable because they're required. Some of them are waivable. So you saw there's a, if you go back, there's a the idea that you're in a tourism zone, right? You're buying one of the houses in old town Williamsburg or something. I don't have to disclose that. That's just merely permissive. So we're not preventing the transfers from happening, but we're requiring the disclosure of those particular things, right? So in summary, right, we've moved away from true caveat emptor in that we have a lot of disclosures, some of them required. I can get out of a lot of the permissive disclosures by just putting an as-is sale clause, the I here being the seller. But there'll be some that I just can't avoid. But even if I can't avoid them, it doesn't mean that I still can't have a purchase of the property and the property still has the defective drywall, let's say, in it, or was still a previous meth lab.